PBS talk show host Tavis Smiley will be the keynote speaker at a forum in Kentucky on poverty later this month. Smiley is a journalist, political commentator, and now an advocate for the poor. He has been critical of the Obama administration, but Smiley faced a scorching backlash from former fans for his outspokenness against the country's first black president. We talked about his poverty tour with Cornel West, his clash with President Obama, and diversity in the newsroom. You and Professor Cornel West, you have called poverty an American catastrophe, but oftentimes you hear the discussion of wealth in this country stop at addressing the middle class. Do poor people in this country have a political party they can turn to?
They do not. And at both of these recent conventions, Republican and Democrat, we heard lip service played to the issue of poverty. Pretty much everybody referenced it, which is better than 4 years ago when it didn't seem to come up. In 2008, three presidential debates between Obama and McCain, three debates, the word poor or poverty did not come up one time. Obama didn't raise it. McCain didn't raise it. The moderators didn't ask about it. So we're at least getting some lip service to the issue. Now the real question is, who has a plan to get serious about eradicating poverty? Poverty is now the new American norm. One out of two Americans is either in or near poverty. That's 150 million people either in poverty or just a paycheck or two away. So you can't, to your brilliant question, you can't just talk anymore about the middle class, because the new poor are the former middle class.
I was going to say the latest figures are pretty daunting. And not only that, but there's this prolonged unemployment and the sluggish recovery, which is only straining the situation more. But in this political era of austerity, is there a will from lawmakers and Washington leaders to reignite a war on poverty? Jesse Jackson has been calling for that at the Democratic National Convention. Is there a new willpower for that new war on poverty or poor people's campaign?
Well, we're pushing for that. This is not, to your wonderful question, this is not a skill problem. It's a will problem. We have the skill. We know how to take the concerns of poor people seriously and push down poverty. Lyndon Johnson did it last and best and most aggressively in this country. And even then, he was relying mostly on government programs. We could do better than that. But the point is that there has not been a president since Lyndon Johnson who has taken the bully pulpit and said, I'm going to make poverty a priority. Michelle Obama gave a brilliant speech at the DNC convention, and she started by saying to the woman who introduced her, a military mom, we got your back. We got your back. Wouldn't it be nice to hear the next president of the United States say to poor people unapologetically and explicitly, to those who are suffering in poverty, we got your back. And we're going to bring together the leading experts in this country on poverty, and we're going to have a White House conference on the eradication of poverty, and we're going to create a national plan to cut poverty in half in 10 years and to eradicate poverty in this country in 25 years. There are all kinds of programs and plans to do that. Dr. West and I are calling for that White House conference on the eradication of poverty in our book, The Rich and the Rest of Us. And that's why we're back out on the country right now, around the country right now, on this Poverty Tour 2.0, going to four battleground states, Ohio, Virginia, Pennsylvania, and Florida, trying to get this issue higher on the American agenda in time for these presidential debates.
But how, Tavis, can mainstream politics overcome or deal with the roots of American inequity if they are unwilling, both parties are unwilling to identify the lower classes by even using the word poor?
Yeah, it's going to take a push. There's no doubt about it. I'm convinced that there is one thing that I do relatively well. There are a lot of things I can't do well. But the one thing I've been blessed to have is a platform on public television, on public radio, through my books, through my appearances, through the internet. I've been blessed to have a platform as a broadcaster and as a philanthropist. And so I'm just using the platforms that I have to try to beat the drum. And Dr. West is beating that drum along with me. And everywhere we go, last year on the Poverty Tour, 9 states, 18 cities, we turned that tour into a week-long special on PBS television. And then we wrote the book, The Rich and the Rest of Us, and it hit number 7 on the New York Times bestseller list. And now we're going back out on this Poverty Tour 2.0. So every time we keep hitting this issue along with other persons, there was a shadow convention at both the Republican and Democratic conventions in Tampa and Charlotte. There was, alongside the actual conventions, these shadow conventions that Arianna Huffington and others were involved in, and they had three major issues they focused on. One of them was poverty at both conventions. So there's starting to be a louder drumbeat about poverty in America that politicians are going to have a hard time ignoring. So when you hear Paul Ryan and Mitt Romney talking about poverty in their speeches, those guys, The word is starting to get out. The push now is how do we get them to take the issue seriously and create a national plan to eradicate it? But I think, I sense that we're starting to make progress. At least we're getting a conversation now about the issue.
Now, with your bully pulpit, you've been a critic and some would say a conscience of President Obama in many respects. You've been praised by some for it and slammed by others. You said in a recent article that I read that President Obama should be pushed, that Lyndon Johnson had Martin Luther King, that Abraham Lincoln had Frederick Douglass, that every president has had an agitator of sorts. Do you think Black America has let Obama off the hook?
They have. And I understand it from the standpoint that Black folk waited a long time to have an African-American as president in the White House, number one. Number two, we've never had this experience, so it's been very difficult for Black folk to learn how to do the dance of critiquing and holding accountable an African-American president. Number three, he's been up against so much, the mess that he inherited, how much worse it got once he was inaugurated, and then on top of that, Republican obstructionism all the way through. So I'm very sensitive to what this president has been up against. At the same time, I recognize that sometimes you have to fight even with your friends. Sometimes you got to fight with your friends. You do it lovingly, you do it respectfully, but you agree to disagree, and the president's got to do what he has to do, and I got to do what I got to do. And at the end of the day, I am very comfortable with the long view of history. With the long view of history, I'm more than comfortable with where I have stood with all the hell that I've had to endure from my own people. I still love Black people, and there ain't nothing they can do about it. But I'm very comfortable with the long view of history on what I've tried to do, and that is to be consistent to the truth. So in that regard, I haven't moved. When one looks at my track record, the same critique that I leveled against Bill Clinton, when he didn't go into Rwanda, when he signed that crime bill, that racist crime bill, when he signed the welfare deform bill, when he sandbagged Lonnie Guinier, there's so many things that he did right, so many things he did wrong. When he did things wrong, I took him on. So I've been consistent about that all the way through my career, and I think that in the long run, people will come back to that. But this has been a strange moment for Black folk trying to learn how to do this dance again with this president. And some of us have, you know, have ended up almost as casualties of that process. But I wouldn't change a thing.
Because think about the historical accomplishment and the cultural pride associated with that. But were you surprised at all that the criticisms against you were that it was personal, that it was no longer a political issue? Here you were, a commentator holding other presidents to account, but then when Obama came into office, people automatically almost made it seem like it was a rat beef.
Yeah.
Are you surprised at all? And to be fair to your critics, do you think your criticisms of the president have been personal at all?
No. First of all, my criticisms have never been personal of any president. I don't have a personal axe to grind. The truth of the matter is I've been very fortunate in my 20-year career, and let's be frank, I am rich. I was once poor. I grew up in a family of 10 kids, and my mother and my grandfather and my maternal grandmother, Big Mama, 13 of us living in a 3-bedroom trailer with 1 bathroom. That's how I grew up. I've been blessed beyond measure, and I am doing extremely well these days. I mean, this economy is tight on anybody running a business, but I've been blessed given where I started, so that if I were going to side with the guy who wants to take care of my money, I'd side with Mitt Romney. But that's not my inclination. That's not who I am. I always look out for the least of these. That's who I am. And I love Black people, and I hate seeing Black people treated as afterthoughts. I hate seeing Black people live beneath their privilege. I hate seeing poor Americans beyond Black folk. I hate seeing the humanity of all kinds of Americans, of all races, colors, and creeds. I hate seeing their humanity contested. I hate seeing poor people rendered invisible. And so, you know, I learned a long time ago that when you do what I do, you're going to be challenged, sometimes with merit, sometimes without merit, but I've never, ever taken this as anything personal. And again, I think in the long run, people are going to, when we get out of this era, out of this moment, people get a chance to look back at the record, they will see that I've been consistent all the way through.
Now, one thing I do love about your radio program with Dr. West is that you all give a chance for people to sort of call you out, which is remarkable.
Yeah.
One thing I didn't see, and I wanted to get your reaction to, there's a group of community leaders in Los Angeles who are planning a protest for September 11th for your tour because of the association between you, Dr. West, and Walmart. Is it a contradiction? Because you admitted earlier that you're now wealthy and you're sort of trying to keep those doors open for people like yourself who climb the socioeconomic ladder. But is it a contradiction to have a $1 billion corporation like Walmart, which has issues with labor, to help fund a poverty tour?
First of all, they're not funding the poverty. I'm glad you asked that question. So one, Walmart is not sponsoring the poverty tour, number one. Number two, Walmart does not sponsor my radio program, Smiley and West, or my other program, Tavis Smiley. What Walmart does sponsor and has for many years is my television program on PBS, and I've had to give account for that and answer that question many, many times, so this is not something new to me. Let me give you three quick answers. Number one, there is no perfect company in this country. When you find one, please let me know. Every one of them has issues, and we have gone through many of them trying to find the best partners that we can. So there is no perfect company. Folk need to understand that. Number two, I do not speak for Walmart, and I don't need to defend Walmart. I don't need to and don't feel compelled to. But Walmart has made great progress over the years. They got a relationship with the SEIU, a major union, where they changed their health care program. There is a black woman now, one of the highest ranking CEOs in the country, a black woman named Rosalind Brewer, is the CEO of Sam's Club that a lot of people don't know about. And again, I don't feel the need to defend them. But like any other company, just like presidents, they have to be pushed. And I've done some of that from the inside, talking to them and advising them, trying to help them be a better company. But I do that for any company that supports my work, that gives me access to the CEO, whether it's Nationwide Insurance or Microsoft and Steve Ballmer, or Walmart, and now Mike Duke, prior to him, Lee Scott. So I've been consistent about that all the way through. Number three, the real problem with some of these protesters and individuals who, to your earlier question, want to make things personal. My granddad said to me years ago that so often people would rather talk about the people, protesters, would rather talk about the people who are talking about the issues rather than talking about the issues. So they get so caught up in talking about Tavis Smiley because he's a personality, he's a celebrity, I'm an easy target.
Isn't that sort of the two-edged sword, though, that at the same time, your personality and the pulpit you have is what draws people to it, but at the same time, it's also
absolutely,
it draws the criticism of those
sure,
protesters as well.
And that's what I mean. You know, you're going to be, when you do what I do, you're going to be challenged. You got to take the heat. It's par for the course, and I don't lose any sleep at night about it. When I wake up in the morning, the first thing I do after I brush my teeth and wash my face is to take my big boy pill. I take a big boy pill every morning because I don't know what's coming at me during the day. What I know is that no one should ever or will ever be allowed, without me saying something about it, to question my values, to question my motivations. And again, I'm very comfortable with my track record down through the years of defending those who are politically, economically, socially, and culturally disenfranchised. Sometimes I do that with support from people who are imperfect individuals, imperfect corporations. But at the end of the day, what I have been blessed and allowed to do is to raise these issues on public radio, on public television, and nobody has ever told me what to do or what not to do. I own it. PBS distributes it. I own it. PRI distributes it. I get a chance to raise the issues that I want to raise, and poor people have been and are now and always will be at the top of that list.
One final quick question. Given your track record in media, and I'm someone who talks about this often in the newsroom, being an African-American journalist is something that's really important to me. There have been complaints that there's still a lack of diversity in American newsrooms. What mm-hmm. are your thoughts on the state of black journalism? We see with the rise of TV1, sort of as a counterbalance to what BET was. BET's
sure.
now back, trying to get back into the news game. Once again, you've obviously been doing it for a number of years. What are your thoughts on the state of black journalists and journalism today?
Two quick thoughts, and it's an interesting dichotomy, and it's a brilliant, brilliant question, as all your other questions have been. I thank you for all of them. On the one hand, black journalists are more necessary and more relevant now than ever before. Why? Because there are certain questions in this multicultural, multiracial, multiethnic America still. There are certain questions that just don't get asked if we don't ask them, certain issues that don't get raised if we don't raise them, certain people who don't get profiled if we don't profile them. So we're more necessary, more relevant now than ever before, even with a black man in the White House. So I support, black journalists and the work that they can do when they're truly committed to the cause. On the other hand, it's been a lot of black journalists who've given this president a pass. I look at black newspapers. I look at other African-American journalists as individuals, and they've had almost nil to say in terms of any critique, in terms of any holding to account this particular president. So black media has been just, they've been silenced by this particular administration, again, trying to figure out how to do the dance. Nobody in black media wants to end up like Tavis Smiley, that is to say, being labeled as an outcast or getting pushback for a certain part of a few years of your career. I mean, that's all died down. But nobody wants to end up Tavis Smiley, so they don't say anything. And so the black prophetic tradition that the media, black media, has been at the center of, the black prophetic tradition of speaking truth to power and to the powerless, has been put on life support in this arena. So the point I'm making is, while on the one hand we see more outlets for black journalists to have a voice, whether it's the internet, even for people who are not really journalists, for bloggers, there's so many more outlets. TV1 is there now in addition to BET, and BET, as you said, is getting back in the news business. So there's so many more outlets now than there were years ago. There are more outlets, but there's more silence. There are more opportunities, but there's less courage. And so that's the real problem, that it's a double-edged sword. On the one hand, you know, we got more chances to be heard, but the question is, what are we saying?
Well, Tavis Smiley, thanks for joining me.
It's my pleasure to have been on with you. Thank you for your time. I really, really appreciate being on with you, and you're hosting a great show, Philip. Thank you very much.
Thanks.